Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So, end of February already.
Oh, no, isn't time flying? You know, it'd be Christmas before you know it.
I'm gonna try and leave it to at least June before we start talking about Christmas again.
I know. You'll be thinking of that Christmas present soon, I tell you.
Oh, dear.
But at the moment, we're in the middle of awards season, aren't we?
We are. It's Oscar territory.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's been lots of awards flying around. Do you keep track of all the award shows, Brian?
I try to, but there are so many, aren't there? You know, when it's usually when the Golden Globes start, you know that's the beginning, don't you? Then you've got the Screen Actors Guild, or you've got the BAFTAs and the Screen Actors Guild, then the Oscars. And it is difficult trying to keep track, but I think it's fairly clear what the best films of the year have been. I don't think they deviate very much, do they? I mean, they say that the Golden Globes are the precursors to the Oscars, and they're a good indication of where their thinking is. But the word is Oppenheimer, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think it's going to win? Like, yeah, it's already won several, right, at the time of recording this.
Yeah.
I think it's going to win most of the ones left. I haven't seen it. You've seen it, haven't you?
I've seen it, yeah. I mean, obviously, I have my issues with it, which are not that substantial, to be honest. I just found it slightly overambitious, but it is a very good film, and I'd be quite happy if it won the Oscar for Best Picture, you know, particularly when you look at what else is nominated. But there you go. Perhaps we can talk about that post Oscars.
Well, I think it's one of those discussions that gets everyone very heated. And I mean, I'm so far behind because I don't catch up with the films as quickly as I should. But you're right on the front line of this all. Yeah, you're really watching all these films as they come out. Yeah, was there a film last year that you thought was deserving of the Oscar but is just nowhere near the front line of contenders?
Yeah. I mean, there are certain films that never quite get the attention they deserve, and I think that's more the case now than ever. One film that always stood out for me, but that completely missed out any nominations of any note, was Till, the film about Emmett Till, the 14-year-old boy who was lynched and murdered. And it was more about the story of his mother, Mamie, how she showed the world what they did to her boy. Brilliant. Brilliant film, but just completely got eclipsed in the Oscars and the BAFTAs. Nobody took any notice of it, and I think it is so sad. But I think that's the product of the age we live in now, that certain films will not get the attention they deserve, and some films are overpraised. It's
definitely
odd.
Agree with that, like, in terms of like the marketing strategy now. Like last month we reviewed Saltburn, and it's a good film, don't get me wrong. I think it's a very good film, and I really enjoyed it. But I'd say it's in the middle. I don't think it's anything particularly jaw-dropping. Yeah. There's nothing about it. It's a very well-made film.
Yeah.
But I think because it had the Amazon star power machine behind it, that everyone was talking about it. And like you say, a film like Till, I remember you talking about that on our show last year. And that's the type of film, it needs to have a light shined on it. Yeah. It needs people to go and see it. But if it got like a minimal kind of theatrical release, people didn't get the bums on seats that it needed.
Yep.
It just kind of gets lost in the waves of all the cinema releases. And I think that's a bit of a shame sometimes. But then awards season does also have the ability to shine a light on some gems, because sometimes it does. A few will come through, especially in the lesser known categories. Like you suddenly go, "Oh, that won an Oscar for something," and you go, "Well, better check it out," because it wouldn't get that recognition if it wasn't at least half decent.
It makes you curious. I mean, I think it's interesting because Maestro's been nominated for an Oscar. It's got 4 or 5 nominations in the big categories. And that's the life story of Leonard Bernstein, which stars Bradley Cooper and Rosamund Pike. And it's very good. Had a very limited release. In order to qualify for an Oscar, it has to go on theatrical release for a set amount of time. But you could literally have seen it on Netflix at the same time, more or less, But they satisfy the rules. And that's kind of the opposite. That's a film that might have flown under the radar had it not been for the pulling power of Netflix. It is very influential now.
There you go. Well, in this episode, we are chock-a-block. This has got to be one of our biggest slated list of films that we've ever tried to attempt.
Yeah.
So, welcome to UK Film Club. If you're wondering what the hell's going on, it is essentially Brian and myself discussing all manner of films. We will cover cinema releases, some streaming films, indie films, and also look back at a classic movie. I won't tell you what the classic film is right now, but I will go because I've had it in my head quite a lot. But yeah, we have got an enormous amount to get through. What we do is we like to review some of these films, shine a light on them. We have some that people have actually asked us to review, physically sent us. So we'll get to those in the indie section. But first off, we're starting with the films that have been or are available at cinema recently. Mm-hmm. And we even have a film, both of us have seen this, I hope. That isn't available yet. It's coming out in March, I believe. I will look up the official release date shortly. But we were given a pre-screener to this. And the film is called Benel and Adama. Now, from your ums and ahs, Brian, you have seen this, right?
I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, and whilst I look up the release dates, do you want to give a quick synopsis on this one?
Yeah, sure, of course. So, Benel and Adama, directed by Renato Tulesi, starring Katie Main and Mamadou Diallo, a young couple in Senegal must contend with the disapproval of their remote village and its elders. A visually beautiful film, great use of light, shade and colour. They've got the wide plains of Africa to film, so it looks absolutely stunning. The storyline I found slightly thin on the ground. We've got this couple trying to break free of the tribe's influence and the fact that Adama has refused to be head of the tribe, which has supposedly led to a drought and the death of villagers. I'd like to see a bit more going on there, but otherwise, a very solid picture, very well made, beautifully shot, and some very sensitive portrayals there of a different way of life, a way of life that we wouldn't comprehend at all. A very simple life, a very austere life, but not always a very happy life if the two characters portrayed are anything to go by. But good stuff. There's a lot of good stuff going on there.
Yeah, I think you're right. In terms of that, for me, it felt like a gothic story. And it was like you had this way of life that was completely unlike anything that we are used to in the Western world. But there was so much going on there that was relevant. In terms of talking about gender roles and talking about expectations of the generations below, because Adama, obviously, he's a chief of the village, but he's very young. I think like his father died or something, and they are very keen on keeping those bloodlines in the chiefdom, as it were. And then, so there's a lot of expectation on him as a male, to provide not just for his own family but for his village and for everyone. But he's torn because you've got this love story obviously with Benel, and you're like rooting for them as this beautiful young couple. They dream of like digging their home out of the sand around the outskirts of village,
but it just makes you wonder what an incredible incredibly different life that we lead and the comfortable life that we lead compared to some. But the life they are living in their village in Senegal is probably no different from the life that their ancestors would have lived 100, 200 years ago. That's what struck me about that, is that progress in itself, or what we would see as progress in the Western world, literally stands still. And that's what I find interesting about it. But, you know, as I say, visually, it's great to look at. Absolutely brilliant to look at. I mean, you may well think that you can't go wrong filming in Africa, really, because the scenery is absolutely spectacular. But I like the way they handle extreme close-ups, and they allow silence to drop into the story from time to time. It's something I'll come back to with other films that we're reviewing. But I think silence, if you do it properly, can be really effective in a script, because you allow the story to breathe, the characters to breathe, and you have time to contemplate the story as well. So
I think it makes it that much more haunting as well as a film, because there's lots of different genres at play in this movie, but it's definitely got horror elements to it, like you know, what happens in the story and some visuals as well. I won't go into it, but there's a shot of her on top of a well in a red dress.
And it just
really stuck. And like you say, I think that silence is so unnerving. It makes you go, oh, it sends chills down you. And that's why, like I said, it felt gothic. It felt like a story that you would have told you know, centuries ago.
I know.
And there was something about it as well that felt almost sort of unnatural to it. Like it had this element of like what's going on around these characters, around this village. And, you know, they allude to this as well, that, you know, maybe she's done things to cause these horrific things to start happening.
Yeah.
And also, it doesn't ever veer into that territory. It doesn't veer into the, okay, right now we're going to get all gruesome, like, at all. That's not at all what this film is like. It's far more intelligent and mature than that. It's more sophisticated, I think. It causes you to do a lot of the imagining yourself, I think.
Which is more challenging in a way, where you don't see it all. Like, it's where the filmmaker leaves a certain amount inside your own head, which I think is quite clever and not easy to do. So, it's got a great look and a great feel to it. It really has. But, you know, it's the visuals that strike me more than anything else. But, you know, it is about tradition, superstition, responsibility, being passed down from father to son. And really, I feel they're trying to break away from that tradition and live their own lives. That seemed to be the tenor of the story. And it's a question of whether they were able to do it or not. And they have parental pressure on them, don't they, as well?
Yeah.
For them to do what they feel is the right thing, not necessarily what Banao and Adama think is the right thing as well.
So I think that came to sort of a lot of fruition with the expectation on Banao to like have children. And I think that's a strong theme through this, you know, in terms of what's expected of men and what's expected of women. And I must say, Katie mainly plays the Banao character. She's incredible. She's so engaging to watch. Like, you're watching her and absolutely lethal with a slingshot. Am I right? I mean, those poor birds.
You wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of her, would you? Let's put it that way.
No. But it's a fierce performance. It's really strong. And I think on a film like this where, you know, it's playing to its strengths, like the location's amazing, but it's not going many places. So you do have that element of it's very claustrophobic, it's insular, that you're relying heavily on the actors to do that sort of heavy lifting. Yeah. And I think that they've got a great cast here, and the direction is really good.
I think they've all got potential. I think the leading players in this film, you would imagine them going on from here and, you know, breaking out into the US / British film industry, shall we say. But you can't imagine them staying put, you know. In other words, I suppose what I'm saying is they won't stay provincial. They will break out of that, because they're very photogenic. Both leading actors have got something there, you know. So, yeah, very solid piece, I would say.
There you go. So, Banao and Adama is out in cinemas in the UK and Ireland on the 15th of March 2024, depending on when you're listening to this, and has done really well at festivals. You may have caught it at last year's BFI London Film Festival. It was also a Cannes selection, Toronto as well. So it's done very well critically. We were talking about Till earlier. This feels like the type of film, again, that will go completely under the radar. And as much as we'd love to say that we're shining a light on it, I don't. Do you get that feeling that it's not going to get the eyes it deserves?
I think so. It's not going to do great business, sadly. But that's no indication of how good it is, because so many films now, I think we often say this on Film Club, that so many films deserve a bigger platform and deserve more praise, but it almost works the wrong way around. The films that deserve the attention don't get nearly enough, and films that you think kind of, you shrug your shoulders a little bit, but they go mad over it. I don't get it. I mean, I don't know. It's all about opinions, isn't it? And, some films have a natural momentum about them, don't they? They're self-perpetuating and they generate their own publicity, and for some reason they work. But it's not immediately obvious to me or possibly you. But that, it's the way it works now. But it doesn't, it doesn't always make sense to me, if I'm really being honest. But there you go.
There you go. It's not meant to make sense, Brian.
No,
that's the thing.
No, it'd be boring. It'd be boring if it made sense, wouldn't it, really?
Well, hopefully the next film makes sense. George Clooney's The Boys in the Boat. You've seen this, Brian. I haven't seen these next cinematic films, but Brian has. What do you think of The Boys in the Boat?
Okay, then. So let's do the basics then. Directed by George Clooney, starring Joel Edgerton, Callum Turner, Hadley Robinson, and Peter Guinness. This is a true story based on the book written by Daniel James Brown. The story begins in the mid-30s as Joe Rance is trying to pay his way through college. Washington University are looking for rowers to fill their junior eight's boat. The lucky eight will get bed and board, but more importantly, a regular wage. They might even clinch a spot representing the USA at the 1936 Olympics. The boys come under the watchful eye of coach Al Ulbrichtson, who has to mould a team that will compete with the wealthy Ivy League universities. Joe is gently motivated by a childhood sweetheart, Joyce, who senses a champion in the making. Now, Chris, this is all about underdogs fighting the system, working class boys out to prove that money can't necessarily buy success. It's a touching story of sporting excellence and a desire to be the best. It's never corny or sentimental, but tells a story of honest graft and genuine endeavour. It was a much simpler world on the cusp of global conflict. Yet these values still endure as an example of the way a good life should be lived. I love this, Chris.
Yeah.
I really think it's great. For me, the film of the month. Film of the month. I've got to say it. Of the five that we're looking at, or say six, including Bernal and Adama, this is the best of them. It's a true story, so it has more impact because you know it's a true story. But it's told with a lot of guts and a lot of honesty. I love the way George Clooney directs. Rowing, I don't think, is a particularly easy sport to capture on film either. You know, you don't see a goal being scored or a touchdown or a try being scored. You're just filming a boat on a river. But the way he captures it is absolutely brilliant. I love it. There are really nice performances throughout. Peter Guinness is very good as the grizzled boat builder. Really good. Love this. But as we've just mentioned, that you know how great films can fly under the radar? This one's going to do the same. It is still on general release. You've got to look for it. But I think it will be coming to the end of its run on theatrical release. More's the pity. Because I think this is a terrific film. Really a lovely film.
It looks fabulous. And like I said, I've got a lot of time for Clooney's filmmaking. And with a cast like this, it's got a lot of reasons to be watched. Yeah. I think, there, like you say, there's that essence of it's mostly about rowing. That it's going to fall outside a lot of genres. You know, sports films, yes, that's a big category, but
yeah.
I mean I just googled like rowing films and there isn't really much on there that sort of I'd say that that big. It's not like boxing, you know, like boxing films, yeah. You could list them all day. But often with these stories, obviously it's far more about the context, you know, obviously what's going on. And I love films that are set in the Depression era. I think yeah. that's it's yeah. such a rich ground for stories. And
yeah, it is.
This sounds like one of those movies where it's going to be that, oh, I'm so glad I've heard that story. It was like in our previous episode, it was the Anthony Hopkins film. Was it One Life? Is that what it's called?
One Life, about Nicholas Winton. Yeah.
Yeah. Who I never heard about. And it was like such an important story that suddenly it's like, yes, we got that. And that I think is really important, especially at the moment with the way filmmaking is going. You know, it becoming more, I don't know, just bland. I guess like just they're trying to make the movies as cheaply as possible, as blandly as possible. That someone like Clooney, who does have such a artistic merit to his name, he could have gone off and just been an action star, but he hasn't. Like he's chosen to go and do this, you know, make these films. I think they are worth our time.
Absolutely.
Is it cinematic though? Is it worth the cinema visit? That's what I always wonder with these films.
Yeah, it's a good point actually, because I would say most films do, but a lot you can get away with. This film, you've got to see on a big screen to see that, have the full dynamic view, get the benefit of Dolby Surround. This has got to be seen on the big screen, and I think you realise what a very good director George Clooney is. You know, I'm a huge fan of Clooney as an actor and a director, but he knows what he's doing. You know, he's got a great eye and he sees what's most important in a story. Now, look, you know what a big fan of sport I am in general. I didn't know this story at all. You know, when you are vaguely aware of it, but I didn't know the background. So I learned something new. And I felt slightly embarrassed that this was big. These are Olympic competitors and I knew nothing about them. And so, even for me, as a huge sports fan, it's something I didn't know about. So if I didn't know, I'm sure there are a lot of people that wouldn't be aware of the story as well.
Absolutely. You know, you are doing a service, Brian, by telling us all about these films.
I hope so.
Yeah, I wouldn't have known
either. That's my job. If I can do that, my job is done. Yeah.
So that's The Boys in the Boat, as Brian said, currently on release, but very limited. Probably going to go to streaming. Not too long for that, but let us know what you think, because it sounds like a fantastic movie.
Yeah, love it, love it.
Boys in the Boat. Now, I watched the Elvis film recently. The one called Elvis. It gives you a hint, guys and girls and everyone in between, that we're going next with the next film. And I thought that was really strong. Yeah, Baz Luhrmann film, great movie. So I'm very intrigued to hear what you're going to say about Sofia Coppola's Priscilla.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, as you say, directed by Sofia Coppola. Very, very solid director. You know, a careful hand on the tiller. You'd expect it to be good, and it is good. It stars Kaylee Spaney and Jacob Elordi, who we saw recently in Saltburn, didn't we? Based on the book written by Priscilla Presley, this is the story of her life with Elvis. Now, because it's based on the book written by Priscilla, I don't doubt its authenticity. There's no exaggeration, no mudslinging. She's got no reason to lie and can only be a true account of what happened. On that basis, I find it disturbing and quite creepy, actually. Let's make no bones about it. Elvis groomed Priscilla from a young age. She was 14 years old when they met. He wouldn't let her go out to work. He told her what clothes to wear. It's a textbook study in coercive control. If that's what happened, if that's true, I'm working on the basis that it is a true account, and there's no reason why it wouldn't be, but I put that proviso in. So fans of Elvis will not enjoy this film. You know, they say never meet your heroes. I'd supplement that proverb and say never learn the truth about your heroes, because you will be upset and disappointed. But, you know, it throws a light on the dark side of Elvis. As I say, Sofia Coppola always does a sound job in the films that she makes. Although I would say, though, that the interior shots are in darkness. I'm not really sure what they were getting at there, but the lighting was terrible with the interior scenes. I'm not exactly certain why that was the case, but otherwise, very good film, very well made. And interestingly, there are no Elvis songs on the soundtrack.
Oh, really?
Which I think is a good move in some ways, because it's not necessarily about Elvis, it's about Priscilla. But there's a great soundtrack of 60s and 50s music, but a good solid tale, and as I say, quite disturbing in its own way. Very effective, very well made.
It's interesting. Yeah, I hadn't heard amazing things. I read some good reviews and some sort of middling reviews.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, just my very limited knowledge of Elvis and Priscilla, I thought, yeah, it's definitely a person of history that deserves a film, you know, to find out. You know, she was so close to Elvis, but also had her own story to tell.
Yeah.
And I think these are the sort of films and stories that if you're a aficionado of the time, you're gonna watch it, like you say, and you'll know the history, whether it's true or not. But I don't care if it's true or not. Like, I find sometimes that does get in the way. Like, people get a bit funny about it. They're like, oh, well, that didn't happen like this. And it's like, but you know, they've got to tell this story, right? It's not about, you know, what actually physically happened. Even documentaries don't do that. Like, even documentaries have to try and, like, you know, kind of put together some narrative.
Yeah.
But I also think, like you say, that when there is authenticity, when you are at least sure of the source, that you can kind of go be a bit more invested in it, I guess, because it's like, well, okay, well, actually, you know, some of this is going to be based on truth. Obviously, you take it with a pinch of salt, but there's a enhanced viewing experience there because the narrative is coming from that person.
I mean, even for Priscilla, it's an interpretation of the life that she had with Elvis, right? Who better place to talk about Elvis than Priscilla? She was married to him. But again, like I say, you always kind of put that health warning on it. But then again, as you point out, it's interpretational, isn't it? It's what you see. It's what you experienced. It's the spin you put on the facts, right? And in one person's eyes, it's going to be totally spot on. In somebody else's eyes, it won't be, you know. And that's, I suppose, that's the challenge of putting true events on screen, is that you can't always be absolutely faithful to the truth, but it's supposedly based on a first-hand account. On that basis, you go with it and say, well, yeah. I mean, and you put yourself in her shoes and what she must have gone through. And, you know, that everyone has a dark side. One thing I would say about this film, though, Jacob Elordi, who plays Elvis, who we saw in Saltburn, it's one hell of an actor. He perfected Elvis's southern drawl down to a T. Absolutely brilliant. You know, you wouldn't think it. He's Australian, Jacob Elordi. And in Saltburn, he played a character with a home county's accent, and you wouldn't have thought he was anything but English, you know. And there he is playing a high-profile historical figure like Elvis, with as authentic a Southern American accent as you'll ever find. He's definitely one to watch. I was really impressed with him.
There you go. Fans of Jacob Elordi will be very happy to hear that. So that's Priscilla, currently in theatres as well. But at the time that you're hearing this, it may not be. But do let us know what you think, because we're always intrigued.
Absolutely.
Now, this next film has been talked a lot about, is a lot of people obviously big fan of the director Yorgos Lanthimos, and I've seen a lot of different things, so I'm intrigued to see what Brian is going to make of Poor Things.
I am Bella Baxter. I'm a flawed experimenting person. I seek outings and adventures. Bella's so much to discover.
You're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen.
I am finding being alive fascinating.
Bella.
Why I keep it in my mouth if it is revolting? I must go punch that baby.
We must experience everything, not just the good. But degradation.
Shall we sing?
Horror. sadness. Bella! Then we can know the world. And when we know the world, the world is ours.
We need more.
No more. Any more's too much.
Yeah, right, okay. So this, you know, it's on general release, doing good business. Directed by, as you just mentioned, Yorgos
Lanthimos.
Yep. Well done. You've been rehearsing that, haven't you?
Well, it's one of the few directors where I was like, oh, John, I'm going to learn that one. Because I love The Lobster. I thought Lobster and The Killing of the Sacred Deer, both fabulous films. Yeah. So I'm intrigued to see what this
is. He's a very capable director, for sure. This is starring Emma Stone, Willem Dafoe, and Mark Ruffalo. What we have here is a female version of Frankenstein with some bells and whistles added. This is the tale of Bella Baxter, a young woman who is brought back to life by a brilliant and highly unorthodox scientist called Godwin Baxter. Bella's life takes an unexpected turn when she escapes the gilded cage built by the doctor. She lands in Paris, where her life is never quite the same again. Now, I would have to say, this is a very well-made film. It's a good picture. I'm not denying that for a second. But what I am surprised by is the acclaim that it's received. Again, it ties in with what we were discussing earlier on about films that get passed over, films that are overpraised. This film has been nominated for 11 Oscars and it's won 5 BAFTAs. And whilst it's good, I'm not sure it's that good. You know, it's actually very explicit. The sex scenes are really, really explicit. Leave nothing to the imagination. It's virtually all I can remember of the film, really. strange, that, isn't it? But anyway, yeah. It leaves nothing to the imagination, as I said, and it obscures what is a very intriguing story. You know, it has its merits. It's good, but it's not that good. And the fact that it's got 5 BAFTAs already shows how highly regarded it is. But this is where you've got an academy of elected representatives voting for a film set against what the public might vote for. So there is that kind of trade-off, and we've got the same scenario with the Oscars as well. Very good film. It's good, but it's not that good, if I can put it that way.
Wow. I mean, I wasn't expecting that, but it hasn't put me off watching it at all, because I think, yeah, I've recommended his films before to people. I said, oh, you should watch The Lobster. And yeah, they've done that awkward thing where they've come back to me and gone, yeah, I couldn't get through it. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, right. Like, if you haven't seen, because funny enough, Barry Keoghan, who we reviewed in Saltburn last month, keeps coming up, that film. He was in The Killing of a Sacred Deer. I wouldn't recommend that lightly to anyone, because it is a very dark film. So with this, I think, you know, if you're in that genre and you're happy with that genre, then definitely you're going to watch it. But
yeah,
I think, like you say, when a film starts to get all that acclaim, you do start to think, okay, is there a reason behind that? Like, is there a reason why this is doing that well? Is it connections? Is it, you know, is it a voting thing? I don't know. Don't want to be cynical, but it could be.
Well, look, there always is that possibility, because, you know, members of the Academy, members of BAFTA are elected, they're put there for a reason. And there is this kind of relationship between the Oscars and the BAFTAs, and awards that are voted for by the people, by the public. And I think you would get something totally different if the people were voting for it. That's not to say this isn't a good film. It is. But I don't feel it reaches the heights and the zenith that it seems to have climbed to. But Emma Stone's very good. Mark Ruffalo's very good. Willem Dafoe goes without saying he's going to be good. You know, it's a good cast. It's well designed. Emma Stone plays the part well, because for much of the film, she is very childlike. And as the film progresses and the plot moves on, she grows up very quickly, without giving too much of the plot away. But she grows up and she becomes an adult. So I would say it's a challenging role to play, which she does very well. You know, it does kind of, to me, I look at that film, the way it looks, it does remind me a bit of Baz Luhrmann, the way he would approach a film. But, you know, it has its merits, but I don't really see how it gains that much support and how it's so revered. But, you know, it's all about opinions, you know.
It is, and that's all we have at the end of the day.
All we have, that could be our buzz phrase for the time being. It's all we have is our opinions.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't think it'll catch on, unfortunately. There's too much marketing going on these days.
I know. We'll have to try a bit harder, won't we?
Yeah. Well, hopefully the next film tries a bit harder. So let's see what Brian made of The Color Purple.
Don't keep me waiting.
You keep your head held high, just like Mom taught us.
Whatever I say, go.
You got to stand up.
Hell no.
There's gonna be some changes made.
This ain't me.
Hush.
We need to look like we belong.
It's time to see the world.
Hell no.
Hell no.
Hell no.
Oh, Miss Ceiling,
you look good.
Hell no.
Hell no.
Don't be no fool. Don't waste your time.
Hell no.
Any man that hurts your ass.
I've had enough of you.
Oh, man.
Surprise!
All you've got to say, you need to say, you better say.
The women at this table have lost their minds.
Now you're preaching.
Head to the dough. When I do my dance, only time I'm on the flow. And I don't even let a man take me that low.
Right. Okay.
Now, listeners will be thinking, that little bit by Brian there, is that a good? Right. Or a bad?
Right. Okay. Am I still that mysterious? I thought I was quite easy to read. Well, okay. Let me tell you then. Right. Color Purple, directed by Blitz Bazawule. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
I'm going to give you full credit for that. That sounds right.
Well, if she's listening in, I do apologize, but, you know, anyway. Starring Fantasia Barrino, Taraj P. Henson, Coleman Domingo. Now, this is an adaptation of the Broadway hit musical based on an original book by Alice Walker. Listeners may also be aware of the 1985 film, directed by Steven Spielberg and starring Whoopi Goldberg. The story in a nutshell. Should we go for the story in a nutshell? Yeah. We're in Georgia at the turn of the century. Sisters Celie and Nettie are separated by circumstances beyond their control. Celie suffers years of abuse from a cruel husband in a loveless marriage, but gradually she finds strength to lead an independent life. Thoroughly enjoyable film. The songs are great. I'd love to see this on stage. I find it amazing. It's never been on the West End, been on at the West End, never been there. But hopefully this film might give it a route to the West End. You never know. I've got to name check the songwriters, Brenda Russell, Ailey Willis and Stephen Bray. They did a great job. The performances are amazing too. Fantasia Barrino, God, that girl can sing. She's amazing. The only downside for me is that the songs bury the story to a certain extent. The original novel goes to some dark places, and you lose that in the context of a musical because it is so joyful and happy clappy, you know. But if you want more of the story itself, then the Spielberg version is better, but hugely entertaining. Really is. Gorgeous film in that way. But it dilutes the story, you know, the fact that with a musical, the song should carry the narrative, and they do that. But because the story is so broad and challenging, it gets lost when they convert it into a musical. But that might be a minor point to some, but Very good entertainment, though.
Wow. I misread you. I thought you weren't going to like this. So that beginning, right. I got completely wrong. So listeners, if you guessed right, then you know Brian better than I do.
I'm keeping you on your toes, Lana, Chris.
Absolutely. I'm always reticent when it comes to musicals because I do find sometimes that I get a bit bored of it. Or it's not sinking for me that, the whole breaking into song, it just jolts me out. It's kind of like theatre. Sometimes when you watch really good theatre, you're like, okay, yeah, I was really immersed in that. Then there's other times where you go, yeah, I was very aware that I was watching people act. You want to be sucked into the musical if you're going to do that. And it sounds like this does that, and it's entertaining. I think that's another thing with musicals. They have to be entertaining. Yeah. But people will let us know. It's in cinemas, and I think you can even get it on Amazon already. It's on the rental
side. Yeah, I think it is. I think they tend to overlap now because logic would tell you that it won't stream until it finishes at the cinema. But they do, they do overlap.
So yeah, they've got deals in place, haven't they?
Yeah, so you can see it on the small screen. But, I take on board what you say about musicals. And I'm always very ambivalent about musicals on film because I don't think they always translate particularly well. But, I think the Steven Spielberg version of The Color Purple is an interesting counterpoint because if you want to appreciate the story, it's Steven Spielberg every time. That's got to be the best. But if you want pure entertainment, great songs, let's Buzzawule. I was showing off there. I knew I could. I thought I'd say it again. Anyway, very good otherwise, though. But, I think you always lose the story slightly with a musical.
There we go. Color Purple. Let us know what you think. Go to our last cinematic release. Not a film about the Plymouth football team, I'm guessing. This film is called Argyle.
I am such a fan, and this is honest to God, your best yet. I'm not just saying it, I'm not.
Oh yeah? What is it you do?
Espionage.
Right.
The greater the spy, the bigger the lie. That's cheeky.
Oh, not what you expected a spy to look like, huh? Well, yeah, in fairness, that is just about the only thing your books get wrong. A male model in a bespoke neurojacket with a stupid haircut tends to stand out on a train as opposed to everyone else in this car.
Them, you don't notice.
Have I lost it? You all right?
No, I'm fine.
So to my Matthew Vaughan. Mm-hmm. What's this one, Brian, and should we care?
Should we care? Well, it's a middling, it's a fair to middling sort of.
You could tell your tone there, yeah. Definitely.
Did I give it away then? Did I give it away?
Yeah, very quickly, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, a Matthew Vaughan film starring Bryce Dallas Howard, Sam Rockwell, Henry Cavill, and a host of cameos. I feel this film can be a filler whilst we're waiting for the next Bond movie, if I'm being honest. Ellie Conway is a successful novelist who specialises in espionage tales. Her latest book features Argyle, a recurring all-action spy master. Ellie lives quietly, but is constantly berated by her mother Ruth, who thinks she should get out more often. As fate takes a hand, Ellie finds herself on a train, sitting opposite the mysterious Aidan Wilde. He urges Ellie to trust him, as always not what it seems. Surrounded by aggressors, she is quickly convinced her life is in danger. They flee with her cat Alfie strapped to her back in a see-through glass case. It seems her stories are getting too close to the truth and threaten a sinister organisation led by Agent Ritter. Great entertainment, brash, colourful. Set pieces are well executed. Totally absurd, but that's okay. It's tongue-in-cheek. It sends up the spy genre. And Bryce Dallas Howard, Sam Rockwell are great in their respective roles. They have an absolute ball playing these parts. Good cameos, as I mentioned. But I've got to say something about Dua Lipa as LaGrange. She, I feel she struggles in a very limited role that demands too little of her abilities. It's not the film she should have chosen if she wants to break into serious acting. On screen, she looks absolutely sensational. She looks gorgeous, but doesn't do a lot of acting. Struggles to put one word in front of the other. It's not the part she should have taken. And almost in a way, I'm surprised she took the role, because it gives the impression that she's there for decorative purposes. I mean, she does a great dance routine with Henry Cavill, who plays Argyle at the beginning, and it looks great. But it just feels so disposable, the character in the scene. It doesn't do anything to the film at all. And I thought she would have chosen something a bit more challenging. But there you go.
There you go. Well, you know, some other actors that pop up, Richard E. Grant, John Cena. It sounds like, yeah, that sort of film, it's been made with a lot of fun in mind. We're going to just have a blast. The reviews aren't that favourable for it, but I don't think they would be with a film like this. But it'd be interesting to see what people think. And like you say, you know, if you're into the Bond films and all that sort of stuff, then you know, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. I actually quite like that. Henry Cavill, didn't it? I thought that was all right.
Well, I mean, bear in mind that Matthew Vaughn directed The Kingsman. And it shows. And I found them hugely entertaining. But, you know, it's a question of what people like and don't like. If you're not a fan of spy, light-hearted spy movies, you won't like this at all. But if you're a Bond fan, as I said at the beginning of the review, it's kind of like a filler. You know, if you've got that kind of James Bond-shaped hole in your life, then this could temporarily fill it. You know, so it's not as dynamic as Mission Impossible, shall we say, but it's certainly at the bottom end, but it does the job, and it's pleasant to watch, as ridiculous as it is. You know, in the written review, I finished the review by saying that you need to have your disbelief suspended for prolonged periods of time, because otherwise it'll get tiresome. But for its type, it's all good.
There you go. I just love the idea of them putting on the poster, you know, great if you're looking to fill your James Bond shaped hole. I know.
You think that's good enough? It wasn't bad. You know?
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah,
it wasn't
bad.
And what a great place to finish our reviews of the cinema movies. So all of those are either at cinemas now or coming to cinemas in the case of Bernal and Adama. Do let us know if you're on certain platforms, there's comment sections, or just on our social media, just let us know what you thought of those movies. It's always good to hear what everyone else thinks. Unless in which case you're going to be nasty, about us in particular.
Yeah, I know.
We don't want to hear about that. Like, that's no, fine. Right. Keep that to yourself.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we don't really want to know that, do we?
We're moving now to a Netflix movie. This came out in February, I believe. And yeah, February the 9th on UK Netflix anyway. Original title, Cool, in English means Ashes. And we've both seen this, Brian.
Yes, both seen this.
Mm-hmm. And I gotta be honest, I enjoyed it more than the reviews did. I think that it's got a very low score on IMDb, 4.2. But I had more fun with it. But I'm interested, just your general impression, Brian. Was it good? Was it bad?
Yeah, it was reasonable for me. You know, I think it worked reasonably well. What I think was a problem with it is that it's a Turkish film, isn't it? Dubbed into English. I don't think dubbing, lip syncing Turkish onto English or English onto Turkish doesn't work quite as well. If you're dubbing a French film or a German film, lip syncing works better generally, but I think with Turkish it doesn't work at all, because what you end up doing is that you watch the lips of the characters, or I do anyway, to see how well it syncs up, and it doesn't quite do it. And I think subtitles might have been better for this film.
Oh, did you not change it? I changed it.
I didn't change it over. Yeah, I didn't do that.
Yeah, I had it on the original language. Yeah, I didn't have a problem at all with that, and I strongly recommend everyone do that. I'm the same. I've seen so many films where I've started in English and gone, whoa, what's going on? Definitely recommend, if you're going to watch Ashes, do it in the original language. Yeah. And also, I think, just generally, you know, this is a story. It's even set in that location. I think it's important that people feel that authenticity coming through.
That's right. I agree with that. It was an oversight on my part because I just started watching and it didn't occur to me to switch back. But I like the story. I like the story. The idea that I think is it Goka or Goksa? Happily married woman, married to Metin, who runs a publishing company. She has her own clothing business and edits new books. And then she becomes enthralled by a new manuscript and is drawn into the plot where reality and illusion become blurred. I like that. I think that's an interesting take. I've not seen a storyline like that before. I don't know about you.
Yeah, it's got this kind of like fascination with books, hasn't it? Because obviously they're a publisher and then they've got this book that seems to be not coming alive. I think that's kind of being a bit silly, but she's reading into the story and then she sort of immerses herself into the story by chasing after the characters.
That's right.
And it starts to take on kind of like a sinister sort of feel. It's a very interesting premise.
Yeah, I like the idea. You know, originality is so difficult to come by in films. In any sort of genre, right? There are only so many possibilities. You know, you think there are hundreds of thousands of plots you could come up with, but they're all derived from seven or eight classic plots, aren't they? But this is different. It's unusual. And when she meets with this the carpenter, Keenan, then the story gets to the heart of the matter more. Visuals are great. I think, again, like Benoit and Adama, beautifully shot. The colours, light, shade, again, it's all going on there. I picked up on the fact it didn't get good reviews.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I think it's pretty decent. I think it's pretty good. You know, you've got it worked out whether you want subtitles or the dubbed English version, go for the subtitles. As you point out, it's a lot better. Stick with that. And I think it's an enjoyable movie. It works.
Yeah, the chemistry between those two central characters, obviously with their voices as well, that is so powerful. I think that was one of the best parts of the film, was those two, for me. And I think the film, much like a few films that we've talked about, like Benoit and Adama, it brings in multiple genres, but without jarring you, because there's this like powerful romance story, but then there's kind of a bit more like of a sort of sinister thriller aspect going on.
Yeah.
And I always know a film is good if like my wife walks in and kind of goes, "Oh, what's this?" Like she got caught up in it almost instantly. She was like, "Oh, she's not a big fan of subtitles, my wife, so she didn't sit through it. But I think, you know, it's that sort of film. It's going to sit on UK Netflix and a lot of people won't watch it. If you're not a fan of subtitles, then you probably already have skipped past this review. But I think it deserves a bit of recognition just for being an interesting story, well made, like you say, beautiful locations. The shooting is amazing. Especially when they get onto like the rooftop and things. I really like that section.
Yeah.
It's worth your time. And one of those films as well that it didn't get all of the promo that a lot of other films get. So hopefully we can do a service here just to shout it out.
Let's hope so. Yeah.
So yeah, pronounce Kul, which is K-U with umlaut L, if you're looking it up, or Ashes. So yeah, let us know if you watch it and what you think. It's on Netflix UK at the moment. And all the best to those filmmakers, because I thought it was great.
Yeah, good job. Did a good job.
4.2. I think that's outrageous. I really do. I don't think it's 4.2.
That's unfair, I think. That's unfair.
Okay. We're now moving to the indie section of our show, which is where we review a selection of films that have been physically sent to us. They've said, please review our film, and we are very honoured to do so, because often these films get reviewed on the website, but we don't necessarily get time to chat about them. But here we can make some time. And great selection in this show. We've got four films to review. The first of which is a feature length called Suit Hung Tied Tongue. Now, I had to read that slowly because so many times I've said it the wrong way around or said it the right. And I think it's meant to, right? It feels like that's deliberate. A tongue twister.
Yeah. It's deliberate, isn't it?
Yeah. which is a feature length drama directed by Sao Dachi.
Attention, people of Ireland. 31 days from now, a top Irish official will be murdered. You will watch. You may or may not understand, but you will recognise the sacrifice that we will make. This is not a joke. This is not a stunt. Thank you for viewing. Ihawa and Kulasov.
Based in Ireland, and it takes on this kind of documentary style to tell a story about two brothers who people are talking about them and some horrific events that have transpired involving them, whereby I don't think it's a spoiler if I say what happens, because it does get mentioned very early in the film.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
A political figure gets assassinated by these two brothers, and they are and a police officer, and they're talking about them. You know, there's like their family members or close relatives or friends, and it's got this, like I said, documentary style, and we then are going from, say, like their childhood. They're talking about they were sort of, you know, normal boys, you know, into like guitar and things like that, but then how they drifted towards this sort of radicalized position that they were in and started doing videos and really talking about. So it's this Minister for Change, I think that's who he was.
For Reform and Change.
And we see press shots of him talking about his role and what he's going to do for Ireland and how this kind of stirs up trouble with the boys, because they, or the brothers, they are under the belief that he is corrupt and ruining Ireland. And yeah, the film kind of starts to get momentum and escalate towards a really strong, almost visceral conclusion, which we already know what transpires, but I think it's still really powerful in the way that it unfolds. What did you think of Suit Hung Tied Tongue, Brian?
Well, let's not discuss the title anymore, because I did really well pronouncing that.
Yeah, say it five times now. Yeah,
I know. I couldn't even attempt it. I was absolutely fascinated by this film. This is so clever what they've done, because it's told in documentary style. And I was watching it, the first 15, 20 minutes. I was, bearing in mind that I didn't read too much about the film prior to watching it. So I went in and watched it cold. First 20 minutes, I thought to myself, God, I didn't know about this. I was convinced it was real, right? I was
Me too.
They were talking about something that happened. 20 minutes in, I thought, I have to Google this. Why don't I know about this? If this happened in Ireland, why didn't I hear about it? You know, and but I thought, no, I won't Google it. But then I think half an hour in, it kind of dawns on you that it's purely fiction, it's dramatized. But that gives you an idea of how effective the film is, because it makes you buy into the characters as being real. Right. And it's only when I think it's only when they were interviewing the police inspector that I cottoned onto it. And then, as you say, it turned very sinister and very ugly then. And the two brothers, the Halpin brothers, it became more obvious what they were about, who they were, how their attitude and mentality grew from early in life to make them what they are now and make them do what they did. But I think what was also very interesting about the storyline was that what they did polarized the nation, that they either were either villains or they were heroes to some people, because they were challenging the status quo, the norms, what people accept as being normal and civilized. Very clever filmmaking, gotta say. Very impressed. And I was taken in for the first 20 minutes, half an hour. I was absolutely convinced it was real.
And I'm always dubious when the sort of pseudo documentary style is used. I'm always like, okay, right, because it gives you a lot of ability to explain, you know, it'll explain the story and you know, give away the, you know, it's like exposition, right? But the way this is done is really clever, because it's really mysterious. You're like, they're giving you these little bits about what happened, but you don't know the picture yet. And it kind of unfolds really brilliantly. Yeah. And what I liked as well was when the brothers start doing the videos, they have this countdown as to when they're going to attack. Yeah. They state when they're going to attack this politician. Yeah. And they're even surprised at how much momentum grows from these videos. Like, they get like lots and lots of views and it starts to almost swirl out of control, because maybe they weren't really that serious, or maybe they weren't, you know, it certainly wasn't going to go the way it did. Mm. And that I found the most compelling aspect was it was genuinely thrilling. Thrilling. I was like, I don't know where, even though you know where it's going, you don't know where it's going. You kind of feel that you must keep watching. And I love the bit because the title refers to a poem, I think, or at least it's a bit of a poem. That's read over the film at one point. And I thought that was brilliantly done. Lots of great shots. There's this really good, I don't know if it's a drone. I'm assuming it's a drone shot over the landscape at one point. I thought that was really well done. Because a lot of the footage is this sort of like, you know, talking head sort of approach. But there are bits in it that are really cinematic. I thought it was great. Really enjoyed it. And sometimes when we sit down to watch indie feature films, there is that element of like, okay, we've no idea what we're in for. This really stood the test. I thought this was great. Would thoroughly recommend it.
Yeah, so would I actually. And I'd like to see it on a big screen as well.
I think it would work on a big screen.
Yeah, I think it would.
In terms of seeing it, so Suit Hung Tied Tongue, we were given a password protected screener, which would suggest that it's still doing the rounds. Do you want to find out more about the film? The company behind it is called Standard Practice. They have a website, standardpractice.ie, and they're also available on all the social medias. The film itself has a Facebook page, so I think that's probably the best place to go for information about release and things. So if you go to facebook.com/suithung, one word, .tiedtongue, one word. Or Google it, or you know, if you're that desperate, do email us and we'll direct you to it. But you should be able to find it. And I thoroughly recommend that you do, because it's one of those films that deserves the eyes. I think there's a lot of effort that's going to make this movie, and for it to be as powerful and as evocative as it is, it really deserves good viewership.
It's very impressive. It really is.
Okay, so that was Suit Hung Tied Tongue. I've done very well pronouncing that. Can I just say I've kept... I don't think I got it wrong once. We're moving now to a film that I can pronounce very well. Settling Down.
Are you going to kill me in the butt too?
Why would I do such a thing? You're our client. All of this is for you, my dear.
You killed my husband.
You got to put money in to get money out. And you have got two dead bodies at sunk cost.
But this isn't what I wanted. I just wanted to...
You wanted what? To go globe-hopping, have lunch on a beach in Mexico, dinner in Spain,
be the fucking Princess of Monaco. You should have thought about that before you eyed dude and swallowed a mortgage, love. You do know it comes from the same word as dead. You're going to list this fucking house, and then you're going to take your profit and we're going to buy another one. And you're going to drywall and PEX tube the shit out of it. And then we're going to list that one. And you're going to do it again and again and again until we flip this entire fucking city. So unpack your fucking bags, Bohemian.
Feature-length comedy film, well, dark comedy, I think, from writer-director Tom Rizzuto. Brian, want to give the synopsis on Settling Down?
Yeah, I'll give it a go. So we have a couple, Faith and Mike, who have, shall we say, a dysfunctional relationship. It has peaks and troughs, like all relationships do. She wants to move house and he doesn't. However, Faith is unperturbed and contacts Huma, a local estate agent who has ways and means of removing troublesome tenants and other difficult clients. And they are gradually sucked into a sinister train of events. I won't say any more than that because there is so much going on in this piece that to reveal more would, I feel, in some ways almost spoil it. But it's surreal in places, but I was going to say gripping. Gripping's not the right word, but it's compulsive. It makes you watch. And there are random scenes that honestly don't make any sense. You know, when they're in the restaurant and the woman's eating spaghetti off the man's bare chest.
Yeah, that came to my head, yeah.
I still don't get that. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't get it at all. But you know what? It works. It's interesting. They've packed it with interesting characters that do work. And they can all act as well. I mean, we mentioned on the last podcast that, well, I did anyway, that often with small indie features, you do often get actors who have very, very basic acting skills. But here, they've got a cast who can all do it. They can all act. They're all very proficient actors. And that makes a big difference, really. But, yeah, I liked it. It's got something about it, but I'm not sure what. But it's got lots of good things going on there. Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely a mixture of genres again, like we said about a few films, but this was kind of more in the ballpark of like a surrealist comedy with a bit of a dark edge, I thought. It was, yeah, there were scenes that were very strange, but it made sense tonally. When you're watching it, you kind of go, this makes sense in the film that I'm watching. And it, what, like you say, the compulsive is a great word to use for this. I thought it was compulsive too. I found that I wanted to know what was going on. I wanted to know how it was going to, you know, conclude, you know, with the wife kind of unwittingly enlisting the services of these, I mean, maniacs, really, you know, what they do. The actual person who goes in, trying not to spoil, the person who does the nasty business, he is particularly disturbing. Like, when he's talking, I was like, you are really, like, odd and strange, and you can't take your eyes off him.
That's right. It has an impact on you when you watch. No doubt about it.
And then there's like the two cops who are kind of investigating, but quite badly. Who I think the director is one of those actors. Yeah. I think I might be wrong.
Yeah.
That had a kind of comedic element. You know, it puts in lots of moments that are sort of funny in the film. I found it scrappy at times. I thought it was scrappy. You can tell it's not a big budget film, and I think that element of everyone was really passionate to make this film, there's a lot of people there putting in a lot of effort, that the result is scrappy. It is a bit like, okay, yeah, like, you've really got to be into this to stick with it. It's not a mainstream film by any means. But there's something there. Well, I mean, we've reviewed some surrealist comedies and things on this show a few times, and this is definitely better than some we've seen. but I can also see that there will be people out there that don't get on with it, that don't get on with this style. But I think that's true of it, especially comedy. Yeah. I think that's true of any comedy film.
I think you have to accept that an independently made film will have certain characteristics about it, and it will be rough and ready, it will be ragged, but you could argue that's part of its charm, that it's raw, right? And that's what gives it a distinctive edge. So you accept that. You accept that it has its imperfections and its flaws, and that, you know, if you're a fan of slick, big-budget movies, a lot of indie features won't necessarily work for you because they can't afford the same production values. But you accept it for what it is, and within its genre, it works well, and this film does. But I take on board the fact that it is rough around the edges, but, I mean, that's more about budgetary limitations than anything else, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And I also thought they did well to capture there's a lot of comedy and bizarre things going on, but there's also a theme running through about, you know, being, I don't know, dissatisfied with midlife. You know, there's this, like, you know, she looks at her partner who's wearing the mask, you know, to stop him snoring. And it's kind of like, there's that undercurrent of dissatisfaction with midlife. And I thought that there will be things there for viewers to connect with, and there's things there for you to enjoy. And if you can stick with it, I think it's a decent film. By the time you get into that latter section, and it does start to sort of vamp up in terms of what's going on. But yeah, hats off to the filmmakers and everyone involved with settling down. The film itself, we had a YouTube link. Let me check. It might be unlisted. It's unlisted. And there is a website, settlingdownfilm.com, but I've just been on it, and there isn't any information about screeners currently. That may change by the time this comes out. But yeah, you can stay tuned on their website, or have a look. You know, they've got an IMDb page as well. Sometimes that gets updated with screenings and platforms that it might be available on. But the film is called Settling Down 2023, because I think there are other films called that if you struggle to find it. That's the situation we're in now, Brian. There's so many films, they've even got the same names, that it's just,
I know, there you go. Limitations of the English language, isn't it, really?
There we go. So Settling Down. We're moving on now to a short film written and directed by filmmaker Charlie Norton, called The Lost Weekend.
Those girls on the bridge were hot as fuck.
Yo, I like to spend a night with them and show them how I fuck.
As if you can handle them.
Do you know who you're talking to? Every girl in Barnstable County knows I got the best dick game in Cape Cod.
Wet dreams don't count, Nick. Yo, James, what'd you think of them?
I thought they were, like, cute.
That's it, dude. Come on.
Come on. We get the whole I went to Catholic school virgin thing, but don't you want to get your dick wet before college?
I mean, I'm not, like, always horny 24/7 or anything.
Let's put it this way. Which one did you find attractive?
The one in the pink?
Okay. What, would you fuck her?
But I don't know if I'd, like, go fuck her, like, right away.
James, it's not that serious. Treat the bitch like she's yours. Girls love to feel your touch.
Get that shit out of there. I mean, oh, James, oh!
James, dog, pussy is everywhere. I'm sure one of them will fuck you tonight.
Unless you're in the closet. I mean, maybe Dylan could invite some dudes over who can fuck you. But you'll never know what it's like to be a man until you fuck a girl. Eh?
Now, this could be a triggering film for some people. There's a few bits in there that are sort of slightly upsetting, but it largely deals with toxic masculinity. I think that would be the strongest thing that came up for me. Yeah. It is about three guys, the central character being James, played by Brendan Egan, who are having a summer blowout, I guess. Nice place in Cape Cod, and in typical almost kind of American Pie-esque fashion, they're chatting about conquests and sex and all the things that, you know, guys apparently do. Wasn't my experience, that was and then we've got, so James is within this group, but he has had quite a conservative upbringing. He was in Catholic school and hasn't had any experience with women yet, still a virgin, and struggles to deal with the sort of masculine views being put on him, as well as being kind of goaded, especially by the character of Nick, played by Henry Lynch, who is quite a toxic force. And the film starts with James refusing to, well, not wanting to jump off a bridge. And I thought that was brilliant because I don't know about you, Brian, but when I was younger, my mum always said to me when I got in with the wrong crowd, well, if they jumped off a bridge, was you? I think that was every boy's childhood. They had that said. And I thought that was a great way to open this film.
I know. It does remind you a little bit of what your mum or dad might tell you. Don't do what the others do. Don't do what the big boys do. I like this. I really enjoyed it. I think it was well captured, well observed. I like the dynamics between the three guys because James, as you say, had the very cosseted, sheltered upbringing, who's been brought along by his friend Dylan. And you've got that friction between James and Nick. Nick, who's a lot more, much brasher, more forward. James is very nervous, uncertain of himself. And he's basically the plus one, isn't he, James, on this particular trip? So I like that dynamic, the way that develops. And when the girls are introduced into the storyline, Caroline, then everything changes. And it's interesting to see the way James's personality evolves and develops over that weekend. And the way, again, it is a study of masculinity, isn't it? About a guy proving himself to his peers. That's what comes through really, really strongest for me. But yeah, I liked it. I think it was nicely played, well acted, well observed. It's good. You know, I think for a small independent feature, it's got a touch of gloss that you might not necessarily get.
It definitely felt high-end production value, which I think goes in its favour. And one thing I felt was they did really well capturing this sort of essence of coming of age. And what I loved about it was this idea of it being a throwaway type of weekend. You know, they're going to sort of drink beers by the beach. But actually, these are the type of events in someone's life that can actually be really defining. You know, his reaction to characters put in front of him, like Caroline and, you know, the sort of bullish Nick. Yeah. These are what actually become really important to someone, even though they might not seem so at the time.
Absolutely.
And I love that. Yeah. But I did feel that James's struggle to find his identity could have been fleshed out more. I think there was more to this. There's quite a rapid movement from where he is at the beginning of the film to where he is at the end of the film. It's not big enough within there. I think, you know, it's this kind of, they have this party and everything kind of kicks off, but I felt that it needed more. That was just my personal feeling on this.
I felt that as well. It felt abbreviated in places because they can't give it all the time they want. They've got a limited amount of screen time. They know that. And you just feel that the story loses something as a result of the time constraints, which is unfortunate, but there's something in there. And that's a sign of a good, strong narrative that probably needs more than they could give, more time than they could give it. But yeah, you do sense there's more there. You peel back the layers of a character and the scenarios they're fleshing out. You think, want to see more about that. Want to see more.
But yeah, and I think that's a good thing, right? It's like you want more of this film. And it does well. Yeah, it explores youth, friendship, relationships really well. It touches on like religion and lots of things that are big. But I thought that, definitely would have been happy to watch more. That's another thing. Sometimes you're watching a short and you kind of go, that's a shame that's finished. Yeah, into that.
Yeah, that's right. You think it's just developing, it's just getting going, then it stops. But no, I liked it. Yeah, it's good. I liked it. And, you know, what you mentioned earlier on about pivotal moments in someone's life that almost sets the tone for the way their life carries on. That's what that's dealing with here. Is that those key experiences at moments in their life when they're on the cusp of adulthood, when they're not quite a man, not quite a boy, you know, it's that kind of the in-betweeners, isn't it? If I can quote the Channel 4 TV show, the in-betweeners where they're on the cusp of manhood. So it deals with a complex area of anyone's life really well. And as you say, it covers a lot of themes in the time they have available.
So that was a short film called The Lost Weekend. We were again given a password protected screener, but you can find out more about the film on Instagram at The Lost Weekend Film, all one word, or at their website, flyingcardproductions.com. Definitely recommend seeking it out. Often with these short films, they end up on platforms like YouTube and Vimeo and easy places to watch them. Mm. And I strongly recommend seeking that one out. Really, really good.
Absolutely.
Okay, on to our final indie film. And this is a feature length. It's a film called Tiger. Not spelt like the animal. Spelt T-Y-G-E-R. Now, before we get into the film, I just want to ask Brian, do you know what reference that had within the film? I couldn't spot it, but no, I was hoping maybe you would.
No, I thought you might know. I couldn't see. I thought it might have been something to do with the cuddly toy that belongs to Joe's daughter. I thought it was that.
Not sure, because also the spelling was different, right? But it probably does. Apologies if we've missed this, sorry, that was an aside, but just back to the film. So
that was
Tiger...
a conversation between us, wasn't it?
I'm still not sure about all that, about all this. I'd be lying if I said I hadn't hit my knees a few times over the last few years, but no. Jury's still out for me.
You know, there comes a time in our search for meaning when one realizes there are no answers. And when you come to that unavoidable realization, you either accept it or you stop living. I have so much to be thankful for, and yet every night when I climb into bed, turn off the light and stare into the dark, I wonder, am I right about God?
So, directed by Alexander Milo Bischoff and co-written with Dylan Edwards, the film is about a character called Joe, who's just been released from prison. He's an ex-soldier and very much still going through a terrible time in his life. He gets shown to this sort of depressing apartment where he can start to rebuild his life. He tries to sort of keep to himself a lot, but his plan, we discover, is to make enough money to get back to Scotland to be with his daughter, who he often narrates letters to through the film. He falls in with it was the leader of a group, like an Alcoholics Anonymous type group. He falls in with Neil, played by Sean Dooley. He falls in with him, and the two kind of become friends, and then Neil offers him a job, and things start to look like they're kind of picking up for Joe. Unfortunately, something happens in his apartment that causes him to have to go on the run, and the rest of the film is seeing him basically try and make his way back to Scotland, encountering a few people on the way, such as ex-soldier that he served with. There's some other people on the way that he meets on his bicycle. He's on his bike for most of the film. Yeah. Now, it's not a light film by any means. This is a dark drama, but it is an absolutely brilliant one. I thought this was incredible. What did you think of Tiger?
I loved it. Absolutely loved this. It's grim. Two words I wrote down when I was watching this film: grim and riveting. It's absolutely compelling. You can't take your eyes off it for a second. Brilliantly acted. Brilliantly written. I think Dylan Edwards is excellent as Joe. Sean Dooley, who will be familiar to listeners, appears in film and TV frequently, very busy actor, but a great supporting actor. And it made me think how important supporting actors are to any film, that they do make the film tick over. And the exchanges between Joe and Neil, because Neil's a reformed addict, isn't he? Who's kind of like a counsellor to Joe. I thought he was excellent. I thought the script was brilliant. You know what I loved about the script here was that it's quite sparse. They didn't feel the need to fill the script with lots of words. They didn't feel the need to fill the film with lots of dialogue. And we mentioned about silence being worked into a script. They do that very well here, particularly when Neil and Joe are in the car together and Joe says to Neil, "What made you stop?" And 10, 15 seconds pass by before he reveals the reason why he stopped. Do you know the part of the film I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah, that scene was absolutely heartbreaking.
Wasn't that intense, though?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I think I 100% agree with you about the power of a supporting actor, and I think Dooley does that amazing in this film, because alone, Dylan Edwards does great. You know, there's a lot of scenes actually where he is alone, but I think without that foundation of him and Neil in that beginning part of the film, the rest of it would have not felt anywhere near as breathtaking as it was, because you get that emotion, and it's not just the story, it's just the way that Sean Dooley does that scene. He does it incredibly. I was mesmerized and I was absolutely heartbroken. I don't want to say what the story is, but as a parent listening to that story, my God, that was hard to listen to.
I know.
Amazing, amazing section. Yeah, I love that bit. That's amazing.
And I found it, I was really surprised by it. This film delivered a number of emotional punchlines that I wasn't expecting. And that was one of them, really. It's kind of that type of film you think, well, I feel quite drained through watching that, but I'm glad I did watch it.
Yeah.
You know, it's that type of, you know, when he comes out of prison, this is where I think it's so well observed, because he's an army veteran, Afghan veteran, reforming drug addicts. You know, he's put up with a lot in his life. He comes out of prison and he enters something resembling a prison where he's in this tower block. Even though he's free, he's not. He's kind of imprisoned in another way, isn't he? Living with unsavory types. You know, it's almost like he's living a similar life to what he lived inside. So I think that's quite acute, the way they've observed the experience of an ex-con, someone coming out of prison without any immediate prospects of work.
But, yeah, it's more like his psychological state, right?
Because
when he comes out, and even like throughout the film, you're watching him, you're like, this is a guy that's never left prison. Like, he's not left, really, right? Emotionally and psychologically. Exactly. And he is driven, you know, by this destination. I won't go into it, but he's driven to do this journey. And, you know, he's absolutely set on it. So much so. But that you can't help but watch it feeling so sad for him that he's not finding peace. He's not finding, you know, what he should have found with his freedom. Yeah. And one of those films, like you say, it isn't upbeat. It's not. It's very grim. Like, you watch it, it's so grim, but done in a way that is so enjoyable. It's not the right word, but it is enjoyable. You watch it, you want to watch it. You want to see more of it. You want to feel those tears running down your face when you're watching it.
Yeah.
When he has these, you know, moments, when he has that, I think it touches on lots of different themes as well, like about war, like PTSD, addiction, all these things that sort of come up naturally through history. And it's, but also it doesn't just do that. There's visuals that are amazing. Like, he's by the sea at the beginning. Is it Margate, I think, he comes into? I read Jason Tavui.
Yeah, it's Kent, Margate, isn't it? It's the Kent coast, isn't it?
So, you know, it's also got those elements to it to make it really powerful. It's beautifully filmed. It looks the part. And I just, sometimes you finish a film and you just kind of take a few moments to just kind of just breathe it in. And this was one of them. I thought this was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
I know.
Tiger, strongly recommend it.
Yeah, doubt about it. Like, you know, you reach for so many superlatives about a film like this, and you none of it seems quite good enough.
Yeah, yeah, you kind of struggle to. It was more how you felt, like if you could have been there, you know, when you.
It's what
when
it makes you feel. Yeah.
And it's spelled TYGER. And this film is available to watch. And wow. Do you know what? I don't often say this, but stop listening to this podcast and go watch it. I think it deserves it. It's available on a few streaming platforms. The filmmaker did actually. I think the producer, Olga. Had messaged me or one of the people from the film. 12th of February it was released, Prime Video, iTunes and Google. So you have no reason not to go watch this. I think it's a rental if you're going to watch it in those places. But yeah, 100% recommend it because this is that type of film that, like some of the films we reviewed at the beginning of the show, it won't get the views that it deserves. I could say that, thing, you know, because even if one person on the planet doesn't watch it, then it didn't get the views it deserved. So I really, really loved it. Tiger, go see it now. What are you doing? Why are you still listening? Come on. Oh, it's probably because we've got one more film to review, haven't we? Yeah, that's probably why you're still here listening. People do tune in for the nostalgic slot. If this is your first time to UK Film Club, we review a film from the past that we like to revisit, or maybe it's our first time seeing it, but it's just something that a lot of people talk about. And recently we've been tying these into new releases as well, where possible. So we did June last episode because part two was coming out. And this month, if you didn't get it from my jingle at the beginning of the episode, is the 1984 Ghostbusters film. Now, I believe our friends at the Phantom Zone also were covering this in an episode.
Oh, okay.
So, Chris, Ian, and the gang, please don't shoot us for also covering it. It's a film that deserves lots and lots of people chatting about it, to be honest. And this is tied into the release of the new Ghostbusters film in March, if you're up for that. But Ghostbusters, Brian, now, I'm always intrigued to know where you stand with nostalgia films in terms of, because sometimes I say, oh, yeah, how many times have you seen this? And you say, oh, I saw it when it came out and that was it.
Yeah.
Is that true for Ghostbusters?
Not quite. I saw it when it first came out, went to the cinema and saw it. I can't believe it's 40 years old. 1984. That is absolutely terrifying. But I've seen it a few times since then, but I've not. This was the first time I'd seen it in maybe 8 or 9 years. So it kind of feels relatively new, but it's, of course, it's a film I know so well, and it's a film that I love more now than ever. It's great. It's such a simple storyline to start with. You know, you've got these three parapsychologists who suddenly lose their university funding, and they set up shop as a ghost removal service, as you do, as one does. And it just tells the story of how they attract frightened, sometimes skeptical customers. And the two things stand out about this film. Having watched it now, after 40 years after I first saw it, two things stand out. One is how well the special effects have held up. You know, if you think of how film technology has evolved over the last 40 years, the special effects in this film are still good. They're still decent. And secondly, I've been reminded how funny it is. And of course, if you've got good lines in a film and you've got Bill Murray, who are you going to give the lines to? You're going to give the lines to Bill Murray, aren't you? There are so many good lines in it. No job is too big. No fee is too big. let's split up and we can cause more damage that way. You know, these are just great lines. They still sound fresh to me. The other thing that strikes me about Ghostbusters is the strength of branding in the film. You've got that great logo that appeared on every T-shirt and kitchen magnet you can imagine. It was everywhere. They had the title song sung by Ray Parker Jr. That was everywhere when it came out. So they had really, really got strong branding for the film. And it's a franchise that I welcome with open arms because the characters are so strong. I loved Afterlife. I'm looking forward to seeing the latest installment. But it's such a great film, great memories. and it still wears well after all these years.
Yeah, I echo what you say. I definitely think it's a film that doesn't, I mean, yeah, it looks dated, but it doesn't look dated. It's still effective for what it's doing, especially dealing with the, you know, the, is it called the paranormal? Is that the, is that the right phrase? Paranormal, that you've got that quirkiness to it, but some of it is still genuinely scary. I've not scary. I wasn't like behind the sofa, but there's a bit where they're in the library and all the cards fly out.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's a practical effect. You know, that's not been done with computers. And it's brilliant. It works amazing.
That's what I felt was that the special effects are still good. They hold up. They still provoke a reaction. You don't feel, you don't laugh at it and say, oh, look at that. Look how ridiculous that is. You know, it's not. It's very well done.
Yeah, it doesn't do that, does it? It keeps its quality about it, that you're still watching it, enjoying it for what it was meant to be enjoyed for. Whereas when we watched June last month, I remember watching that feeling, oh my God, this feels like a relic, and not an enjoyable one. It felt like an absolute slog getting through that film.
Yeah.
Whereas Ghostbusters, I enjoyed every minute. I finished it and I was like, I'm going to watch the second one. You know, and I'm definitely, you know, that's just how these films feel. And there's a reason that they keep coming back to these sort of films, because they know that they've been done so well, that the audience is so invested, that they're hoping that they're going to keep the heights of these originals. I'm always a fan of Rick Moranis, if he turns up in anything. And I think the fact that he's only really a secondary character in this, I was like, I want to see more of him. But it's a great cast. Sigourney Weaver is terrific. It's Ernie Hudson, he's in it as well. Really just such a strong film.
Even down to the grey boiler suits that they wear, it's all part of a great image. Builds a great image for the film, the characters, the storyline, you know. And it's a dead simple storyline to follow. You know, there's nothing particularly elaborate or challenging about it. You don't, you know, it doesn't need it, really. You know, it's all about buying into that experience, you know. And, yeah, I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I don't suppose that I could say I enjoyed it as much as I did the first time I saw it, because nothing can beat the impact of seeing a film for the very first time. But, you know, nostalgia can bring, can trigger great memories and also reminds you of what great filmmaking is about. You know,
this definitely fell well into the nostalgia category for me, because I grew up with a brother who was 4 years older than me, and he would show me films that, to be honest, were probably a bit inappropriate. And Ghostbusters fell into that category. Ghostbusters, I found terrifying when I was watching it as a young boy.
Kid. Yeah,
I guess it would be. Like, especially the, I mean, in the first film, it was the hellhounds, the dogs. I always terrified them. In the second film, it's the painting. I the painting, it just creeps me out. It still creeps me out, to be honest. But the first film, those dogs. But there's lots of bits in this that are pretty terrifying to a child. But it also really reminded me of so many great stories from my childhood, because we had the Ghostbusters car. We actually had it as a toy. And
I was going to mention that earlier on, actually.
Yeah, so I had that toy, and there's this great memory I have of us as kids, and we had a family cat called Bubbles, who she got in through the back of the car, through the boot, and would push the car along, like, through the and that came back to me. Stay puffed big thing, you know, that was like a visual memory from my childhood.
Yeah,
the Marshmallow Man kind of thing.
Marshmallow Man,
there's so many of bits of this film that I was like, oh yeah, I remember that, I remember that. So yeah, it felt like a real trip back to, you know, childhood.
Also, the 80s was a pivotal time for the film industry in general, because I think they cottoned on to, in the 80s in a big way, they cottoned on it to branding, merchandising. They realised how important a good soundtrack was to a film as well. So I think during the 80s in general, there were some great films made, because you had, it was a potboiler. You had all these relatively new creative talents coming into the genre, into the game. And You just had great films. I think the 80s, a bit like pop music, really. The 80s was a great time for films. And they may have, who knows, they may have reached their peak in the 80s. You know, these days, I think you get films that are are good, but very few are great. It's something I always return to. And it's not just... That's what nostalgia does, Chris. I think it reminds you of what great filmmaking is. And you don't necessarily get it these days. It's a rarer thing. Back then, you were tripping over great films.
Well, hopefully, next month, we'll see the release of a great film. So if you're listening to this when it's come out in February, or early March, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire comes out on March 22nd. So very intrigued to see, because I've liked all the recent ones. I don't think there's been a Ghostbusters film that I haven't enjoyed. I have been told that the new film, the previous cast members do have more kind of to do in it. They're not just cameos. There's a bit more sort of to them in there. But I love Paul Rudd as well. Really looking forward to him. James Acaster's in the new film, so I'm looking forward to seeing what he does in there. But yeah, if you haven't seen the original Ghostbusters film, it's available on Now TV. So if you've got Sky Cinema or one of those packages or the Now TV movies, it's in there. And you just will have fun with this film. If you go and watch it, if you don't have fun with it, then, well, maybe there's something wrong with you.
Maybe. Yeah,
I don't want to diagnose without actually speaking to you personally, but yeah, that's right.
But you would wonder. I guess you might wonder. But hey, what the hell? But no, what the hell? Well, you know. But yeah, great entertainment. You can't really beat something that's just so relatable. It's such a great film to watch, and I think with the new films coming out, it's attracting a new audience, isn't it? As well, it will be curious. It should be curious about where the genre, where the series came from, where the franchise came from, where did it all start, where did it all begin, and that's what it gives you.
Yeah, and also it just makes a lot more sense as well when you've got these other characters turning up. Yeah. You know, you don't think, who are these people? That you need to know that. and that's the end of the episode. Wow, I mean, this is an absolute BMF of an episode. If you've stuck with us through all this, congrats. Well done. We don't give out physical badges. We just ask that you make one yourself and just pop it on your lapel or something. You know. But do send a pic. We'd love to see them. Thank you very much for joining us. Brian, thank you as always for seeing a lot of the cinema films as well as everything else that I throw at you. This was a big list this month. I don't like thinking that you've got nothing to do. I just think...
I never get bored.
If you've got a minute spare, then I'll just give you another film.
I never get bored. Yeah, no chance of getting bored. You know, keep me busy. Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you to all the indie filmmakers who sent us their films. And yeah, if you want to do that, then head to the website, ukfilmreview.co.uk. There is a button, a big button, that says Get Reviewed, and you can click that. If you message me saying, how do I get my film reviewed? I might be sarcastic like Bill Murray in Ghostbusters, okay? I make it very easy for you to get reviewed. I have a button that says get reviewed, okay? Click it.
It couldn't be simpler, could it, really?
Yeah, no, it's fine. I understand. People are busy. Maybe they just want to ask. That's fine. You can ask. Thank you for listening. Please do share, subscribe, and all those things. It helps us reach so many more people that we want to be part of the community. And if nothing else, just put this episode on again, you know, just replay it. You don't have to listen to it necessarily, but dip in and out, put it just on the low volume,
put it in the background, you know.
Yeah,
it can be movie music, can't it, really?
Our dulcet tones can just accompany you on a long drive or a train journey. You know. Thank you as always to everyone for listening. We really do appreciate it, but that is your lot. Thank you and goodbye.
Bye for now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.